Hello, and welcome to episode 12 of the Arcade Repair Tips Question and Answer Podcast. My name is Jonathan Leung, the producer, director, and editor of the Arcade Repair Tips video series. And joining me today, as always, is Mr. Arcade Repair Tips himself, Tim Peterson. Tim, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Jonathan. It's good to get around to another podcast this month.
Yeah, and I think get around is the major point there. I think we've had a little trouble trying to get together. You know, me and Tim have both been pretty busy with other things, and we're glad that we're able to bring episode 12 of the podcast finally to you. We were hoping to do it before now, but, you know, hopefully better late than never, as we always say. So, okay, well, let's go ahead and start into the podcast. And we might have Stan joining us a little bit later. Maybe he's on his way, but we're just going to start with me and Tim now. So if he walks in, we'll give him the introduction at that point. But let's go ahead and move on to the progress updates from our previous shows. Now, the first one is from Chris, who had a Q-Bert with the knocker problem that we were talking about. I believe Stan gave us a lot of detail on that last episode. But Chris says, thanks for the thorough reply. Time permitting, I will check out the podcast and see what I can do to repair it myself. Again, many thanks. So, Tim, you know, Chris sounds like he was really thankful for the help that we gave him, and hopefully he'll be able to check out this knocker program and knock it out himself. No pun intended. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool that I know that's like one of those things a lot of people would probably just say, oh, well, it doesn't work. But Chris seems like he's really wanting to get his game to 100%, and I think that's a good goal. If you got a game that you're going to keep to try to get especially those premier games in your game room to 100%, or sometimes even better than the original, I think that's a great goal for us collectors to have.
Sure, and you know, we really want every part of our games to work as collectors, you know. I mean, the knocker seems like such a trivial thing compared to, like, the monitor or the controls. But, I mean, if it's something that you remember at the game that's important, I mean, you might as well get it working. So, Chris, we applaud, you know, your efforts to make sure that every part of your game is working. So we're glad to hear that. Hopefully you have time to check it out and you give us a little update soon, so... Let's go ahead and move on to Andrew now. And Andrew, you might remember, was having some problems disassembling his arcade cabinet. He was actually trying to move it from one place to another where he could not fit the entire arcade cabinet in assembled.
He was moving it upstairs.
Yeah, that's right. So he writes us back saying, hey guys, I was quite surprised to hear my question on cabinet assembly answered on the podcast and felt the need to send a follow-up on the topic. When we left off, you, along with Stan, agreed that the first and simplest step would be to remove the control panel to lessen the overall width of the cabinet. Unfortunately, in this case, the control panel is encapsulated between the sides of the cabinet and therefore does not reduce the width. This led me to the worst-case scenario, total cabinet disassembly. Your term building a boat in a bottle was exactly my thoughts as I began this do-or-die situation because that machine was going up those stairs. Fortunately, I have experience in construction, so I had all the tools and knowledge to safely disassemble the cabinet. Overall, the cabinet was built very well, as you said before. These things are built to last, and sometimes support entire buildings. The cabinet exterior was held together from the inside using wood screws, staples, and glue. Using the drill and a flat bar, I took this machine apart and reassembled it in the same day. Some would consider this daunting, or even extreme, and understandably so. But let it be known that it can be done. Your mileage may vary, but it can be done. I certainly wouldn't want to attempt this on any early 80s Williams cabinets, but a newer plastic Japanese cabinet may fare better. In closing, thank you for the advice and support. I appreciate your time and your podcast. I listen to it every week while I'm working on my own arcade machines. Thank you. So, Tim, it looks like Andrew did get his cabinet fully disassembled and actually got it up those stairs like he was so determined to do.
Yeah, and after talking or reading some Andrew actually had a lot of experience in cabinetry work and different things, so... Sure, that played, but of course, you know, like I said, we've took them in through a window before to avoid doing this, so I guess it would be a last resort, but evidently it can be done.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to know that something can be done, even if it, you know, as he puts it, even if it's a little extreme, but, you know, if you really need to get an arcade cabinet somewhere, I guess we know that you can get it there now, so... Okay, well, Andrew, we're glad to hear that you were able to do that successfully, and keep us updated as to any other projects you may have in the future, so... Okay, let's move on to Kevin here, Tim. And Kevin had a Marvel vs. Street Fighter machine he was having some trouble with. And he writes us back saying, hey guys, thanks for answering my question about the monitor scratches and finding a replacement. I have two follow-up questions. First, the degaussing coil did not fix the discoloration issue on my screen. I attached a picture to show you what's going on with it. Any other ideas to fix this discoloration? Second, the model of the chassis is an 826HR, which seems to be for a Wells Garner K7000 monitor. I think it is a 25-inch screen, at least that's what I got from measuring corner to corner. Do you have anything suitable to replace it? If so, how much can you ship it? Thanks again. So Kevin is having some problems here with his Marvel vs. Street Fighter, and he tried the degaussing coil, it sounds like, and I looked at the picture. There's definitely discoloration in the corners of the monitor. I mean, very typical of something that we would usually recommend a degaussing coil for. So, Tim, short of the degaussing coil, what else can Kevin try that might be able to get this monitor into shape?
Well, you can try the yoke rings. Sometimes everybody by now hopefully knows what the yoke rings are. Right behind the neck board is your yoke, which is attached to the tube of your monitor, and there's some rings. I've had some luck. I know a lot of guys say to take like a whiteout pen or something and mark where your rings currently are, because the problem with that, and we talked about this before in a podcast with Michael, is that you can do more damage. So I would play with those a little, mark where they are currently, play with those a little bit. I don't know that that may help him. It looks like he may need a tube rejuvenation. You know, we've mentioned that, and a couple guys have actually taken their tubes down to the local TV repair shop, and most of them will have a rejuvenator or another fellow collector. Stan has one, and I'm sure he would say that's well worth a try.
Sure.
Outside of that, it could be just a bad tube.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask you second, Tim. And you know, it could be that we are having tube issues here that are just beyond, you know, what the scope of the, you know, degaussing coil can do. And, I mean, he asked us if we could ship another monitor to him. But if he just needs a tube, there's a good chance he could get one from, like, an old TV or something like that as well, right?
Right. And I think we got another question similar to that about going to 8liners.com and seeing how to hook up a TV tube to your monitor. Some good information on that website. Yeah, you can pretty much get somebody to donate or go to the TV repair shop. They've probably got a 25-inch tube they'd give you. The problem that we have right now is we don't have any in stock because they're in short supply right now. They're no longer making, or somebody correct me, you know, every time I say they're no longer doing something, maybe somebody else has started producing. We can't find 25-inch monitors ourselves. We need a medium res, and a 19-inch monitors, they're not making those. Or from the standard manufacturers that we normally get, like Wells Garner and Hap Controls and Betson, places like that. So his best bet is to check around other arcade collectors, eBay, Craigslist, in your bigger cities. You might not have a lot of luck somewhere like here on Craigslist, but like Dallas, bigger cities like that, and post that you need one. And there's been times, though, that we've had some and been able to sell them. You can expect to pay kind of a premium price right now because of the fact that they're not out there. Cheapest method, sometimes to go to an auction and look for a beat-us-up old crappy game that has a working monitor. Sometimes that you can, we've actually bought games and got the monitors out of them that was cheaper than buying a used monitor. So that's a, you know, kind of a far alternative, I would say.
Sure. And, I mean, I believe that Arcade Shop might still have a couple of the standard ones and the standard tubes in. You know, they're going to be, you know, like Tim said, maybe a little bit higher. But, I mean, if you're still looking for that, I think Arcade Shop still has a couple in stock that you can take a look at. But overall, you know, they're getting harder and harder to find all the time. So, you know, make sure, you know, it might be in your best interest just to get an old television and see if the tube will work with your chassis. So, Kevin, hopefully that answers your question. I wish we could help you out further as far as having one in stock, but like we said, we are short right now. So
yeah, we'd be putting them in a game probably.
That's right.
We've got a couple right now that could use one.
Sure. So hopefully that answers your questions. But let's move on to Elijah now. And Elijah says, this is concerning a Raiden 2 with a warped picture. He actually wrote in last podcast, but he tells us, as it turns out, I had busted the yoke on my 25-inch display. The vertical yoke measured 20 ohms when the Wells Garner manual said it should be around 10 ohms. Replacing the yoke from a similar unit corrected the issue, though shortly afterwards I began blowing fuses and cooked a chassis. I assume this is from a bad yoke placement that may have allowed it to short on the tube. So, Tim, it sounds like Elijah got the warp picture out of his Raiden 2 monitor that he had in there, but he did it at the cost of trying to replace the yoke, and apparently something shorted. Worked for a little bit, and apparently something shorted and blew up everything.
Yeah, it's kind of the chance you take. That's definitely an advanced repair, replacing a yoke on a monitor, although it's not really that hard, but, man, you got to do your stuff, dot your T's, cross your I's, really carefully, you know, and then it could be totally related, or his first yoke could have already done the damage, and so, you know, it's hard to say or guess, but usually when, yeah, it's usually a short somewhere causing that. We definitely probably should have it looked at. You could take it to a local TV repair shop maybe and just ask them, hey, because I guarantee a good TV repairman back in the day had replaced a few yokes before, way more than us for sure.
Sure. Yeah, and that might be good advice, Tim. Check it with your local TV repair shop and see if they can't, you know, maybe take a look at that for you just to make sure that everything's okay after everything blew up. Obviously, you can fix everything on your chassis. You should be able to pretty well. You know, just get one of the repair kits from, like, Bob Roberts, replace a lot of those parts. But overall, you know, you're going to have to be careful about that tube again.
Well, everybody remembers a few years ago when we all had tube TVs. We take it to the TV repair shop. If it had anything to do with the tube, the next words coming out of his mouth was, buy another one. and really, I mean, just the parts, you know, if you start having to troubleshoot that tube and stuff, you could try a rejuvenation. A lot of times will fix those shorts. I don't know that it necessarily was something he did. It just could have been that monitor's time. So I would highly recommend him take it to a TV repair shop and see if they can rejuvenate it. Or maybe they would see, tell him what you did, and maybe they could tell you, hey, you know, you did this wrong, or you didn't seat this right, or they might could find the short if that's what it is.
Sure. Well, you know, hopefully that's good advice for you, Elijah. Hopefully that'll, you know, if you take it there, they can give you some insight, and, you know, that helps you out with your issues. So, okay, let's move on to Tyree now. And Tyree was having a Street Fighter 2. I believe it was dropping the color red. And he emails us back saying, I emailed and had a question on YouTube about the reds dropping out of my monitor, and your advice led me to narrow down and solve the problem. Yay! You know, we'll do a little celebration dance here. I wanted to thank you again for the help. I have a few minor problems I'm hoping you'll be able to help me solve, or at least identify. The two outstanding issues I have are a light snow on the monitor. It doesn't look like a short white horizontal line. Oh, it looks like a very short white horizontal line that crosses the monitor horizontally and up. It's kind of slow, and it doesn't make it hard to see the picture or anything, but it's very noticeable. And then two, if the monitor has been off for a while and I turn it on, it starts out extremely dark. After a while, the brightness will kick it in, and it will look normal. But even after every once in a while, you see the screen brightness fluctuate for a split second. Sometimes it's barely noticeable. Sometimes you can really tell it got dark for a split second and then faded back. If I can solve these problems, my monitor will be perfect again. Thanks. So, Tim, let's take these one by one real quick for Tyree. First off, he's saying he's got the, you know, very short white horizontal line that crosses the monitor horizontally and up. And Tim, how do we get this line out of our monitor?
Well, he says a key word in here. He calls it snow. And we didn't get a picture of this, but when he says snow, that actually makes me think it might not be his monitor. What I'm leaning towards, and I could be wrong here, is I've noticed a lot of times when you have one that's not grounded correctly, and that could start at the wall plug. You know, we've talked before about how you need all three prongs on your plug, and then following it up. A lot of times when a monitor's not grounded correctly, Jonathan, I think, you know, it'll look like snow on the screen, or you kind of have those. Let me see if I can describe it this way. When you close your eyes, sometimes you see swirlies and things.
Sure.
And I kind of think of that picture when he said snow on the monitor. Sometimes you get like these dots and things, and they usually kind of run vertically up like that. Now, he can do some adjustments to his holds, and although I don't really know, unless, you know, you always do a cap kit and try that route in case it's a cap that's starting to go bad. I don't really think they tend to hang on to the last possible minute, and then they go bad, from what I understand. I wish Michael was here and could elaborate on that a little bit for us. But when I think of snow in the picture, I think of bad grounds. So let's make sure your cord is grounded, and let's make sure that you're also running a ground wire or strap to the chassis. I know a lot of guys only run two wires up to that monitor.
Sure.
You need to run that separate ground over to it to ground out that chassis. And a lot of times something like that will clear up. Also, try a different plug at your house, too. Make sure that your plug is okay there.
Yeah, and I was just about to mention that. Of course, you know, Tyree, we would refer you to our post on replacing a plug on a power cord as far as getting that ground wire, making sure you have that ground prong on your power end. and, you know, just making sure that's there. Of course, you might also need to run a new, an entirely new power cord for that as well. So, you know, just take that into account when doing this. Now, Tim, on Tyree's second question, you know, he says it gets extremely dark sometimes, and then it'll kick in and it'll get dark again. Could this also be the same grounding issue that you're talking about with the snow as well?
You know, it could be. More than likely, though, this is something related to a cap or his flyback. So let's start there. Maybe check your grounds. If they're fine, let's go ahead and do that cap kit and get that monitor fresh. You know, it never hurts. And if nothing else, we can at least eliminate those problems. We can kind of go from there. But like I said, they do sell a video brightener from HAP. I know somebody was going to try that. Again, tube rejuvenation. I've seen Stan rejuvenate a tube that you could barely hardly see. And, man, then it really brought out the colors and stuff. Now, a lot of times we recommend tube rejuvenation, Jonathan. It should be said that if your tube needs rejuvenation, it's on the way out. Sure. It's like retreading your tires on your truck or car. I mean,
using Fix-A-Flat?
Yeah, Fix-A-Flat. I mean, it'll get you around the block a few more times, but probably about that time.
Or using that non-standard spare, you know, when I get my flat tire, whatever it is.
Yeah. Oh, the donut?
Yeah, that's right, the donut that we use. But, yeah, and that's exactly right, you know, and I think that's good advice, Tim. Now, the thing about it is, the way he says that it's, like, fluctuating in and out almost makes me think that it's maybe a cold solder joint somewhere on the chassis that might be causing this as well. Maybe just a little bit of movement here and there. What do you think about that, Tim?
Yeah, I would try to see if I'm leaning more towards the neck board on this one. Make sure that the neck is on there really good. It could be a cold solder joint, but, you know, sometimes finding those, what I would do is I would recap the monitor, and while I'm capping that monitor, I would hit every solder joint that I could, like especially around the flyback and stuff. I know Michael, every time I see him work on a chassis, John, the first thing he'll do is he'll go to the flyback in those areas, and he will always touch up the solder.
Sure, and I think that's good advice anytime that you're having, like, short issues like this where, you know, it's kind of an intermittent issue is to, you know, a lot of times that can be caused by these broken solder joints, cold solder joints. And so, you know, go ahead and refresh some of that solder, see if it doesn't help you out as well. So hopefully, you know, that answers a lot of Tyree's questions here. And, you know, drop us a line, let us know how it's going with that monitor. Maybe you can get it to that perfect state like you were describing before, so. Okay, let's move on to Seth. Now, Seth was restoring a Donkey Kong. Remember, he had just gotten his first arcade game. It was a Donkey Kong arcade machine, and he was restoring it. And he sends us an email saying, "I just wanted to let you know that the Donkey Kong machine is finished and running great. I adjusted the blue on the neck of the monitor, and it fixed my problem." Now, you remember, he was having some problems with some blues bleeding, and he immediately jumped to CapKit before even really considering adjusting the monitor. And we mentioned, you know, take the time to adjust the monitor before going to install a CapKit. And it sounds like in this case it worked for Seth. So that's always good. Yeah, always make sure you check those adjustments first, right, Tim?
Right. And, yeah, the simple things first. You know, a lot of times when a game doesn't have power, for instance, I was working on a game today, Jonathan, I could not figure out what in the world, couldn't get the power supply to come on, wasn't reading voltage right,
sure,
was trying all this. And I spent probably 15 minutes and realized that I didn't have any power coming from the floor, that we had tripped a breaker. So, you know, and then, of course, we were able to fix it right after that. But another thing that he said, you know what we like to see? Pictures.
Sure.
And I want to refer everybody to our Facebook page. And maybe, John, you could talk about that a little bit and the job that Mark is doing with that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that towards the end when we get to our new section.
Some people have really been posting some pictures. We would really like to encourage you guys to go to Facebook and join if you're not a member, and if you are, to join our Facebook page. And I'd like to see the pictures of this Donkey Kong. It's
sure.
One of my favorite games.
And he actually did post a picture. I don't know if you posted it on the site or if you posted it on his personal Facebook page, but I've definitely seen a picture of it, and it looks great. Tim, Seth did a great job on the restoration. And we'll talk more about the Facebook page and some of the new enhancements to the website here at the end after all the questions. So you can look forward to that here in a little bit. So,
but thank you, Seth, for letting us know that did fix your problem. And maybe somebody else run across that issue. Definitely try. I notice a lot of times when the colors are bleeding, the contrast will affect that a lot, too.
Sure. And you're exactly right, Tim. When you have bleeding colors like that, you know, especially, you know, a dead giveaway for that, of course, is if your black isn't black, like we like to say. If it's more of like a gray, it's, you know, it's not really that fine black. If you're not getting that, then you're probably having some, you know, some issues with the high contrast. So, and bleeding colors are also indicative of that as well. So, Okay, well, let's move into the website questions. And actually, this is a good transition because Seth also sent in a question about a new game he just recently purchased. And so we'll move on to Seth's question about his new game. He says, a few days after I got the DK machine working, I went out and bought my newest problem, a centipede. The machine itself is in great condition, but when we turn it on, the screen flickers and everything looks messed up. I was told it was a PCB problem, so trying to solve the problem in a similar fashion to taking a shotgun after a mouse, I bought a working PCB, wiring harness, mine was cut up and all taped over, and a cap kit. I've been practicing soldering, and it's not that bad. I went to check my power supply and have no idea what I'm doing. I watched the video you have, but it didn't help. I got a bit of information online and found out how to check the power into the PCB and its spot on the 5-volt VDC, so I know I'm getting power to the PCB. How do I check the overall power to an old Atari power supply? Any help would be great. Thanks. So, Tim, we got Seth here, and he just got his new centipede machine, finished up on the Donkey Kong and everything. Sounds good. And he's wondering, you know, how to check the power on this old Atari power supply. Obviously, this is not the standard power supply that we show in our video. This sounds like it's more of the big transformer, big brick-looking thing that's usually in the bottom of the cabinet. So Tim, kind of describe to Seth, how can we check that power supply?
Well, what he needs to do is, first of all, we're going to look at this problem because it's a centipede game. The problem is probably not his power supply, especially since he's getting 5 volts.
Sure.
What it is that what they call the AR board, which is on the side. And Bob Roberts sells a kit for that. One of the easiest ways is to just rebuild it. It's actually a couple caps, a voltage regulator. It's probably a 15-20 minute fix. And I would highly recommend, even if it worked almost, to do this, to upgrade that, get that AR2. You should see that board on the side of your machine. I'd say it's about a foot long, 6 inches tall. It's got the great big, looks like an amp, like a big heat sink on there. And some of them are a little bit different. All the Atari games are different, so you can't like take one out of an Asteroids, I don't think. But some of them are transferable. But you can get with Bob Roberts, tell him the numbers on there, and get a rebuild kit. But on there are some little bitty loops. If you take that board and you look at it, you're not going to be able to really see it just from looking at the back of your cabinet. I mean, you're going to have to get in there with some good light, or in my case, I mean get within inches of it. And there's little bitty loops, and there's test points on there. And you'll see a GND for ground, and it'll say 5 volts. What you do is you put your meter or your black lead on the ground test point, and these look like little loops that are soldered onto the board. They're made for this particular reason, especially on those old Atari boards. I would venture to check more of those. Now, you can get the pinouts. Best way to check your power supply, which does have voltage going into that. You can also get the schematics for that AR board. I'm pretty sure Bob Roberts can tell him where to check those. You know, make sure you got power going into the thing, of course. I don't know exactly what they are, but if you look for pinouts for centipede, he checked it. One of the best places, though, you know, we talk about checking it at the power supply, but, you know, it's such a lot of wiring. If you're not getting it at the board, it doesn't matter. And if he's getting 5 volts there, more than likely he's having an issue with an AR board. Or, is he hearing, is the game playing at all, I think that I remember on a centipede board, a lot of times the cones up front that start the game, the player one and player two, they will flash. And the sequence of flashes sometimes can tell you where the problem is. So I'd be interested to know if they're lighting up, if it's a marquee lighting up, you know, what other things are going on. But he needs to find the pinouts. You can check the power. Most time your red wires are going to be like your 5 volts. You're really not going to hurt a lot, and some people argue with me. I mean, I went into a game not knowing any pinouts or nothing, and I could kind of follow the ground wire coming in. It's usually your green wire, turns into black or something. I tried to find the ground or find a ground. You can even use the wall ground and then go in and start touching the other wires with your red lead. If you can find a ground test point or any ground in that game, even the ground up to the monitor, you can use that as your ground and then touch the other wires with your other lead, and that sometimes you will be able to tell the voltage from there.
Sure. And that's great advice, Tim. That AR board has been known to cause problems in centipedes.
I bet you anything it's his AR board.
Sure. So, you know, Seth, that sounds like a great place for you to start. And, of course, like Tim said, and we always suggest this, you know, if you're not sure that you're getting power to the board or correct power to the board, you know, make sure you check it at the board, on the pins, on, you know, connecting to the harness, and make sure that that power is there. And we're going to talk here in a little bit. We're going to give some of the places where online you can find some arcade manuals. And I think this will apply in this case, Seth. So listen up here later on the podcast. We're going to give a couple of web addresses where you can find the manuals for different arcade games. And I bet you anything that Centipede manual will have those pinouts that you need. So hopefully that helps you out with your newest problem, Seth, and hopefully we can make that problem into a solution. So let us know how it goes. Well, let's move on to Robert. And Robert sends in and says, to make a long story short, I purchased an NBA Jam arcade today and had to use a French truck to move it. The machine was covered with a tarp. However, during the move, it began to rain and some water managed to get inside. Upon arrival to the house, I opened the back and didn't see any water at first glance. So we fired it on, and it played flawlessly for about 3 to 4 minutes, then the screen went black. Music and sound still work perfectly, just no picture. Could the water have caused a short in the wiring? How long should I leave the machine unplugged before trying to turn it on again, or what's the worst-case scenario? Thanks. So, Tim, we got Robert here. It sounds like he laid the game on its back, put a tarp over it, moved over to a friend's house, got a little bit wet over there, maybe due to some rain, it sounds like, and then turned it on, worked fine for a while, and then just pop. Okay, so what happened here, and why is Robert not getting the picture that he got when he first turned it on 3 and 4 minutes ago?
Well, you know, he asked the question, could it have caused it? Well, the answer quickly is yes, it could have. The likelihood, though, is not real high. You may be like me, Robert. I'm that guy that's the low percentage. When I call in for tech support on some of my games, I'll talk to them and they'll go, well, there's a very rare instance. I'm like, that's me. But, you know, I mean, games are pretty robust. And I mean, we use water-based cleaning things to clean them and wipe down monitors and stuff like that. So the chance of a very little amount of water doing that, you know, Robert, welcome to arcade collecting. We talk about this all the time. We move a game from one corner to the other. It could have been his time, but having said that, it doesn't really take that much water to cause a short in the very wrong place.
Sure.
So it is possible. So here would be my general rule. Although I would have to say, if we had moved a game and had gotten wet, I probably would have waited a couple days.
Sure.
And I would probably, let's just throw out the general rule here of 48 hours. I don't even... Just to be on the safe side, guys, it's probably fine. You could get a fan and open up the back door and blow up in there. That probably could speed things up. But if it's just sitting around your house, it got wet, let's say the general rule about 48 hours. If it's especially, you know, unless you got to do a quick turnaround on this game, you're trying to sell it or something you need to, I mean, it's just a game. Let's wait a couple days and play it, if possible.
Sure. And that's probably a good rule of thumb. But, you know, it sounds like, obviously, that his monitor went out. It's either not receiving power or, you know, we blew a fuse or something like that. So, you know, for Robert, I would be suggesting that he probably needs to check his AC voltage going up to his monitor, make sure it's getting there, and also especially check that fuse, because it could be that whatever shorted popped that fuse. Right, Tim?
Right. Everybody, you know... One thing we look for is we see if a fuse is blown. And I know we kind of get excited sometimes when we find a blown fuse because a lot of times we replace that fuse. Now the older I get and the more I work on games, I always think, well, what caused the fuse to blow? Well, a lot of times it's guys like me in stupidity doing something. Today, for instance, I tried to hook up an AC wire, which was black, to the ground because the ground was a black wire. Well, it popped a fuse. Fortunately, the fuse has a purpose, and that saves you a lot of money. It was a lot cheaper to replace the fuse than it was the power supply and motherboard and everything I tried to blow up today. You remember, we don't always tell you what to do. We can tell you what not to do sometimes.
That's right.
So, you know, I would think that, yeah, we need to check your fuses, make sure you are getting power up there. Worst case scenario, you probably could have popped the hot. I would like to know, does it say here, let's look. It says the screen went black. That definitely sounds like it could have blown a fuse. And that definitely could be something that would protect, you know, your fuses are there for protection like that. So check all your fuses down the bottom of your game. Let's make sure you're still getting voltage up there.
As well as the fuse on the chassis, correct? You know, sometimes you have that as well.
Sure, yeah, your chassis on your monitor has a fuse. Those things are put in place to protect your monitor in case something like it does get wet, or even humidity, things like that sometimes could cause that.
Yeah, so we'll go ahead and refer Robert, you know, to some of our posts. I think we do have a post on checking fuses with a multimeter on the website.
Yeah.
So, you know, go ahead and check out that post, and that's going to give you a good starting point as to how to check those fuses. Remember to take them out when you check them. I think that's something that maybe we don't stress enough, Tim, that, you know, sometimes if you leave the fuse in the fuse holder, it could read a false positive, correct?
Yes, that definitely can happen. Also, I think we stressed this before, don't trust your eyes, trust your meter.
Sure.
Make sure that it reads a good, and I've seen a lot of fuses that look good that weren't any good.
Yeah, and that's exactly correct. So, Robert, you know, take a look at our article on checking fuses with a multimeter and get back with us and let us know how it goes as far as the troubleshooting with the NBA jam. So, okay, let's move on to Craig. And Craig says, hello, I've recently bought a Dragon's Lair arcade and have two problems. First, the daughter card, when moved, will make the picture go nuts. You have to play with it until it gets into the right position, and the picture will then be fine. Any thoughts on this? Second, when playing the game and you make a mistake, it brings up the dead Dirk scene, but then it goes to the next part of the game. I thought if you die, it would start you from where you died and not advance on it until you successfully complete the stage. Do you have any ideas what might be wrong on either issue, or am I just nuts? Thank you in advance. So, Tim, let's first say that Craig has quite a collector's piece on his hands. A working Dragon's Lair is pretty difficult to find nowadays, especially with all the pieces, and considering the fact that they don't make Laserdisc players anymore.
Right. And I'm going to be honest, Craig. One reason I don't have a lot of experience with a Dragon's Lair is because they're rare and pretty expensive. I hope you got a good deal on that. Was nothing a few years ago to see them go for over $1,000 every time we even could run across one.
Sure. And it's even become more popular or more rare than like Galaga's, Ms. Pac-Man's, you know, things that people consider, you know, collector staples. And, you know, now I can answer his second question. I have Dragon's Lair. I've played multiple platforms of Dragon's Lair. And, you know, you're saying the part about that starts you off at a different stage. That is actually the way that Dragon's Lair works. It's the original game, that's the way it played. Now, there have been some hacked or modified versions that have been changed to where it will restart you in the same level, and then you can move from there. But in the original arcade game of Dragon's Lair, it would actually jump you to another stage after you died. So I can answer that one for him, Tim. But what do you think about this whole problem that he's having with the daughter card?
Well, you know, we kind of alluded to this earlier. And I really am being quite honest, I'm not as familiar. I mean, I know it's a Laserdisc game. I haven't worked on a Dragon's Lair in so long. But I do remember that this daughter card, if I kind of remember it right, you could have pins in there that aren't making good contact, the edge connection, cold solder joints on the back. Those are all the things that we normally recommend. Because like he says, if he gets it in just the right spot, it works just fine. So it's making connection at times. And then you barely move it, or at other times it's not. So if there's a way to kind of get those pins in a little tighter, clean the edge, and re-solder the soldering joints on the back, those would be some things I would highly recommend.
Yeah.
And I really am struggling right now to remember that what that daughter card exactly looked like.
Well, and that's good advice, I think, Tim, because this is very indicative of like a short. And anytime you have a short, you know, you want to check the pins and check the connectors to make sure that everything's making a good connection. I mean, it's obvious that when you move that daughter card, something is coming loose and is obviously causing the malfunction that you speak of. So hopefully, you know, checking some of the pins and some of the connectors on that board, making sure that parts, you know, if there are soldered on parts, making sure that there's fresh solder on there, and we don't have any cold solder joints, might also be a really good, you know, really good thing to take a look at. But, you know, take that daughter board out and just, you know, give it a visual inspection and see what you can do as far as cleaning up some solder and some connectors and pins.
Yeah, I know Stan would be talking about cleaning it. You know, getting those brush and getting those pins really clean. That oxidation builds up over time, and those don't make good connections. You could repin it, but more than likely, if you clean them really good, that'll help too.
Sure. So hopefully, Craig, that answers your question, and we hope that you get that Dragon's Lair working. Obviously, I'm a big fan of Dragon's Lair. You know, Tim, back in the arcade, it was one of the first games to take 50 cents, a whopping 50 cents. Man, that just seemed like a lot of money at the time.
Oh, man, I had to mow a lot of grass to be able to play Dragon's Lair. My problem was you couldn't get in line the line was usually so long to play it. And then when I did get up there, I stunk so bad. I was like, next, and I didn't even get... I'm still no good at that game. Oh, well.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's a fun game for what it is, and it was definitely way ahead of its time when it came out. So hopefully, Craig, that answers your questions. And now we're going to move on to another Kevin, different from the Kevin we had in our previous show's part. But Kevin says, I have a Star Wars game, XY Vector game, that I just had worked on, or just had work done on the high-voltage PCB, new flyback transformer, and the new cap kit. I've been trying to get the focus right, and I get close, but then it gets blurry again. Should I get glasses, or am I missing some control for focus that is not on the high-voltage PCB? Thanks. So Kevin has it sounds like a standard Vector XY monitor in his Star Wars game. Stan has one of those in his as well. And it just sounds like, you know, he's having some problems with the focus, Tim. So what could be going on with his Vector monitor here that he can't get it focused correctly?
Well, when he has a new flyback transformer, that to me would be the issue, and getting blurry again, I would check those solder connections on the back of that flyback transformer. I don't know of anywhere else. We might have to do a little bit more research. You know, we got a friend named Kevin that's an expert on these, and Kevin, if you're listening and can chime in for us, I know that you are a little bit more advanced than we are on this type of monitor, but at the same time, I have to say that I guarantee you, he says it's a new flyback transformer. Well, Jonathan, it's not new, right? It's a new old sock, and a lot of times, those, you know, I've been honest, here's that scenario again, you know, 1 out of 100 weren't any good, you know, 99 of them were. Well, I'm the one guy that got it. He said that he had the work done, and so I just don't know of anywhere else that, I mean, you know, you can get your voltage spot on and all that, but I'm really leaning back towards that flyback, so maybe it's that scenario. We're going to ask Kevin, maybe the other Kevin we know, and try to get an answer for you.
Sure, and, you know, and maybe Stan as well. I mean, Stan obviously has a Star Wars too. I don't know if he's seen this particular problem, but, you know, it does sound like it could be definitely a problem with that flyback, you know, if it's not working correctly now. It sounds like he's adjusting it, and it'll stay fine for, you know, a little bit, and then all of a sudden just, you know, it'll get blurry again on him. And it just sounds like something wrong with a pot or almost something like that. You know, I just very, very curious.
Unless you're drinking beer.
Got the beer goggles on, right?
Got your beer goggles on. I shouldn't say that. We'll move on to the next subject. But, Kevin, let's touch up the solder on that, and that really still sounds like a flyback issue. Somebody please chime in for us and let us know if you think it could be something else. So I know we got some really good guys that are good at X and Y monitors that listen to these podcasts. So, Kevin, we're going to keep us posted, and let me ask a few people that just may be a little bit better on that type of monitor than I am.
Sure. So hopefully, Kevin, you know, we'll get a little bit more information for you. You know, obviously, you know, me and Tim talked about this before, that we don't have a whole lot of experience with Vector monitors as a whole. We've only used them there's only a couple of games that use them, and, you know, they're still fairly rare to see. I mean, you know, obviously Tim had a Tempest at one time. That's one of the games that used them. Asteroids, you know, Star Wars, obviously. And so, you know, of those games, you know, there's just not a whole lot of them around that we work on.
I want to throw something else out in there, because you just said Tempest. I know that you can go into the test mode and play with those high voltage pots in that test mode, and sometimes that may help you going into test mode and adjusting it with it in test mode and not game mode.
Sure. And that's at least worth a shot. So hopefully, Kevin, you can try that, and we'll try to see if we can't wrangle up a little bit more information for you as far as this problem goes. So, okay, let's move on to Anthony. Now, I'm going to take a big breath before this one, Tim. It looks like Anthony wrote quite a lot here, and I don't want to miss a word. We would remind you guys to try to keep the questions as pithy as possible, you know, short and sweet to the point. We don't mind the long questions, but, you know, obviously, you know, get to the meat of your question as soon as you can. We have quite a few questions that come into the show, and we want to make sure that we can answer all of them. So, but let's get on to Anthony's question now. And Anthony says, hey guys, thank you for all the work you do to make this hobby more enjoyable for everyone. I'm a big fan of your website and your podcast, and if my newborn twins give me a chance, I'll try again to reach you via the live phone during the podcast. I'm having a problem with my Pac-Man Plus that I purchased a while back. It was inoperative when I bought it, and I was unable to get any information from the previous owner as to its history. I was able to do some basic troubleshooting with a known good Pac-Man cabinet and found that both the board and the monitor were bad. I swapped the boards, I included the Pac Plus daughter board and swapped the entire unit together, and inadvertently further damaged a chip on the Pac-Man Plus board, so I'll be sending that into a repair service. It is, however, the monitor I'd like some help with. The monitor displays a static image, which he gives us a link to, Tim. I don't know if you've taken a look at that or not. The bad board puts out random sprites from the game on the known good Pac-Man cabinet, so this is not the video signal coming from the board. The monitor is receiving 120 volts VAC. When power is applied to the monitor, there's a high-pitched noise that's virtually inaudible, but I'm pretty sure if I kept the cabinet powered on for more than 5 minutes, I would get a nosebleed and a throbbing headache. A visual inspection of the board shows no obvious damage. What could be causing this combination of issues with the monitor? Thank you for any help you're able to offer, and I'll be listening to future podcasts in hopes of hearing a reply. Oh, and I forgot to mention that the monitor is a Wells Gardner 4600. So, Tim, we've got Anthony here, and thank you for that question, Anthony. And, you know, it sounds like he's having some monitor issues, that high-pitched squealing and some other things. Tim, let's give Anthony just a couple of ideas on this. What could be causing the high-pitched squealing that he's getting and all of these random sprites and everything that he's got from his monitor here?
Well, it sounds like I'm looking at the picture that he brought up, and it looks like it's out of sync. It almost looks like the wiring going in may not be correct, but I've also seen a lot of monitors that wasn't the sync issue. I still looking at this picture and think it looks like a board connection, or it's out of sync, which you can help by adjusting the horizontal hold, the vertical hold some, see if that picture will come in a little bit better. The brightness obviously is up really high.
Sure.
And needs to be turned down. That'll get rid of some of those scan lines that you see there.
Yeah.
But definitely time for a cap kit for sure. And, you know, some of those caps are leaking and bad and probably causing some issues. 4600, by the way, is one of the easiest cap monitors to cap ever.
Yeah.
And, a lot of caps, but just take the little bar off the top and take the two cards out and rebuild them. Make sure you remember which card went where and how they hook up and that kind of stuff. But pretty easy monitor to cap. I definitely would. Looks like you could use a good cap kit on it.
Sure. Now, the high-pitched squealing could very well be from the monitor being out of sync, correct, like you were saying?
Yes. That's what made me think, and by looking at this picture, that either the wiring is not wired up right. In other words, the Wells Gardner 4600, it might have had a G07 or something in there.
Sure.
And that is a different monitor, requires different hookups from your game. And we can help you with that farther if you need help with that.
Yeah, and that sounds good, Tim. You know, hopefully, Anthony, that'll give you at least somewhere to start. Let's check the wiring going to our monitor there, and especially, you know, where the position of the sink is, and see if that might be the issue here. What were you going to say, Tim?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, we've talked about before your monitor wires coming from your harness, which is not JAMA, but it's still pretty similar. It's red, green, blue, ground, and sync. You might try moving that white wire over, or if your white wire is looped in with another wire, that's probably because it used to be in a G07, which was common with that. If you'll cut one of those wires, you may be able to play with that a little bit and get your picture in a little better.
Sure. Well, hopefully that answers his question, Tim, and he'll be able to at least take that a little bit further. It sounds like he's got some board issues now that he's got to get worked out, though. And, you know, I mean, we could tackle those for him. You know, it sounds like he blew up a chip or something like that on the board. But, you know, for us, we usually send, you know, sometimes we take a look at, like, the Pac-Man. Isn't there a website, Tim, that has, like, some Pac-Man screens and shows the different problems? Do you know that off the top of your head?
Well, if you go to Mike's Arcade, I know if you'll do a search for the Lawnmower Man, I don't have the link in front of me, but Lawnmower Man Arcade Repair Pac-Man page, you'll get some really good, really good things. It'll show pictures, tell you if this is your picture looks like this, replace this. And we've used that before on this site, and we don't mind sharing that information. Do a search for Lawnmower Man Arcade Repair.
Yeah, and maybe we can put a link to it in the show notes for this podcast as well. But the thing about Pac-Man is because it's so common, there are so many collectors, the amount of material out there as far as fixing them is just exorbitant. And it's great for those of us who have Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man cabinets, that we have all these resources available at our fingertips. So, you know, definitely do a search for that and see if you may be able to get it working yourself.
It's off of the rothblog.com. You've got Lawnmower Man. Dot Rothyblog rothebloglog.com. I want to say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you got it right that time.
Got to say Rothe right. Rothebloglog. Lawn Mower Man. All one word. Dot Rothe, Rothe blog.com. It's got a backslash after that. And then you'll be able to. It's Mike Halland, Haaland. We want to give him credit for that. And also MikeSarcay.com has some stuff on there that you can see.
Yeah, so if you're looking to do some board repair, those will really help you narrow down exactly what part of your Pac-Man board is having the issue. So, you know, check those out. And, Anthony, if you don't send it in for somebody to repair, check those out, see if you can do it yourself. So, okay, let's move on to Ryan now, Tim. And he says, hello, in your degaussing video, you mentioned that you're able to make a homemade degaussing coil and find the details of the coil on the internet. I have been unable to find anything out there that explains how to do it. Is it just a coil of copper wire? I figured I'd better put a resistive device on it, like a light bulb or something, so I don't short it out when plugged in along with a switch. Since the number of turns affects the magnetic field, how many turns should I make the coil? My main reason to make the coil is to save $30 or so, but secondly, I think it'd be a fun little project. I am a mechanical, not an electrical, so it'll be fun to learn. By the way, I have a Miss Pac-Man. I just recently installed a new monitor, which has some slight degaussing issues. Right now, we would like to move the Miss Pac-Man, but if we move or even rotate it, the colors get wacky. With the new monitor, I had to use the old chassis, and I watched your video on the monitor chassis swap-out. Thank you so much. Your video helped a lot. I also had a lot of help from the store I bought the monitor from. I couldn't have had the confidence to do it without your video. Thanks. So, Tim, I mean, we mentioned this in the degaussing coil video, that you can make your own homemade degaussing coil. And Ryan here is just kind of curious as to how to do that. So, Tim, let's talk about, you know, how do I make my own degaussing coil?
Well, basically, you're going to make an electromagnet out of some copper wire. I sent him a link, and I know, Jonathan, you'll probably include the link. I won't say it here because it's really long, but they had a pretty good way of doing it, and we'll post that link. And I always thought the $25 investment, but, you know, after looking at that link, I'm like, well, it's really not that complicated. It's kind of like the cheap science fair project, you know, people used to do with the magnet and the battery and stuff, and the nail.
Right.
Well, kind of that method of making an electromagnet, that's worked that way. And what we're doing with the degaussing wires, we're spreading those electrons out. Anyway, we'll post that link, and you guys can go there, and somebody, by all means, try it and give us some pictures or let us know how it worked.
Sure. And, you know, hopefully Ryan can take a look at that, build one himself, and also come up with it. I know, Tim, I've seen Tim's homemade one that he has, and it, you know, it's kind of ghetto-looking, which is why we like the nice $30 one. It looks a lot nicer when we do the videos and stuff, but it works just as well, and, you know, and can be, like Tim said, a fun project for you and somebody else to tackle, you know, make a couple of degaussing coils, so... Hopefully, Ryan, that answers your question. We'll put that link in the show notes for this podcast as well, so you guys look for that. Now let's move on to Ed. And Ed says, I have a Street Fighter II game that seems to have a short in it somewhere. As soon as I power it on, the fuse on the power supply pops. What are some basic steps to isolate the short? Thanks. So, Tim, Ed's got, you know, Street Fighter II, and it's just popping the fuses around the power supply area. What could be causing this issue?
Well, there are many things that could... What we always like to do is kind of start with you might look at my article on basic troubleshooting. What you can do is unplug everything that goes to. In other words, unplug the board.
Right.
Like the connector to the board.
The harness, yeah.
Then see if it blows the fuse. Well, hey, lo and behold, if it doesn't blow the fuse, problem's probably on the board. You might leave the board plugged in and maybe unplug the monitor next.
Sure.
Maybe even the lights up to the top. I've seen that can cause that.
Right.
So you can try, what I would try to do is unplug everything and plug in one unit at a time and see what blows his fuse.
Yeah, and that's good advice, Tim. You know, I think we need to...
Or it could be his power supply.
Yeah.
And if you unplug everything... Every single thing, and it blows it, then you know it's your power supply.
There you go.
Unplug everything but your power supply and go from there.
Sure. And that sounds good. You know, I think, you know, usually when this problem occurs, it's getting like a feedback almost, like a feedback loop somewhere in the power. And, you know, we've seen it to where it's even been like the marquee light, like Tim said. So, you know, go through each individual piece, you know, plug them in, unplug them, and see if there's one in particular area causing it. I'd say start with the board, then work your way to the monitor and to the marquee light. And if it's still popping fuses at that point, might start taking a look at that power supply as well.
I had a bad coin light holder do that.
Really?
Yeah, and so think about how rare a coin light holder. How often do they go out? That's kind of the way I ruled out. Well, it's not the board, it's not this. Somehow, when it's going up, I unplugged everything in the game. When I plugged in the wires going to the coin door section, it would blow it. Ended up being a short up in the coin light holder. So that just give you an idea of how it could be something real, real minor.
Sure.
To do that.
So, you know, check all the areas where power is going, I think is what Tim's saying. And,
exactly.
And you know, and see if any of those, you know, cause a short. And if it doesn't, you know, then it's probably, you know, it's probably good.
Get you a good box of fuses. Sometimes you go through a lot, but that's a good way to do it.
Sure. So, Ed, hopefully that gives you somewhere to start. And keep us posted on your progress with that repair. So.
Well, of course, I mean, Jonathan, you can use a meter and do all this stuff. But if it's blowing it that fast, this is just a cheap, easy method to do it.
Sure. So, Ed, hopefully that answers your question. Now we're going to move on to Jerry. And Jerry said, I recently picked up a Double Dragon arcade machine. The gameplay's fine, but the entire screen is bathed in red. Any suggestions? I guess he got, like, the bloody version of it or something like
that.
For it to
be
all red.
I think that was the outlaw version. It could be the red dragon. I don't know. But, Jerry, look at our video on adjusting the monitor. It could just be that the red drive is turned up too high.
Sure.
It could be that your red transistor is shorted and open and kind of causing everything else to knock everything else out. But let's try adjusting it first. You know, we've had a lot of guys say, hey, I went and adjusted it. Wow, it fixed it. So watch our video on adjusting a monitor and look for that red drive. And a lot of times there'll be one or two pots, depending on the monitor that you have. Let's turn those way down and see if we can kill some of that red. Then, you know, it probably could be his red drive transistor, or we've talked about, you know, shorts in the wiring on his monitor neck board.
Right.
I would touch up those solder joints, but probably that red drive transistor, or it's just turned way up.
Sure. And that's usually around the neck board, right, Tim?
Yeah, and that neck board area is a great place to start with this one.
Sure. So, and like Tim said, you know, check out our post on adjusting an arcade monitor. Obviously, it's not supposed to be all red on the screen, and this is a problem with your monitor. So, you know, just take the precautions when working with the neck board and working with the monitor as always, and, you know, just make sure that easiest thing to do, check to see if that red drive is up too high. So hopefully that answers your question, Jerry, and you can let us know how that works out for you. Okay, let's move on to Michael. And Michael posted a question actually on our Facebook page and on the email. And I was going to – same question both. I'll go ahead and read it here. He said, I bought a Commando arcade game. It seems everything works right except when you try to play two players. It will allow you to move around the first player, but then when you die, the second player loads. You can't move him at all. Any help would be great. Also, do you know where I changed the settings for free play, off, and difficulty? Thank you. So, Tim, I actually wrote back to Michael. I gave him the reply this time, and I wrote him saying, sounds like you need to adjust some of your dip switch settings on your game. I'd imagine that since the one-player joystick is not working on the two-player game, then you probably need to flip the cocktail table upright switch to upright. Free-play difficulty can also be adjusted through these switches. Check out the manual for the Commando, and I gave him a link to it. And this should give you all the information you need to solve your issue. So, Tim, you know, what do you think? Is there anything else that I need to add to that?
Well, I responded to Michael, too. One thing I wanted to ask him is this a two-joystick game or one? And may just be that the wiring for this, if it's a one-joystick,
right,
and you're using that one joystick to play both players, they might not have the two players wired up to it, which you can piggyback on top of the one players and do that. Or if it's a two-joystick, then, like you said, it could be in the settings. You're basically not telling it, I'm a upright two joystick game.
Right,
some
exactly.
Some of those are in the settings.
Yeah, and so I think Tim makes a good point on both. You know, it could have been that they put this Commando board in a one player or one joystick game when it actually requires two joysticks, and that could be the reason why the second player is not playing. But since it's not a simultaneous game, like a Ninja Turtles, you wouldn't think that'd be the case. But obviously, we've seen it before. So, you know, but check out your dip switches, and also, you know, you might check out the manual as a whole. Now, Tim, I referred to him, and I told him to check out the manual. A lot of guys out there might not have the manual for the arcade game they're working on, and so I wanted to stop here and do a little just, you know, featurette where we say that you can get the manual for your arcade game, and it's pretty easy. There are several websites on the web where you can go and get these manuals, and usually they're posted free. They're in a PDF format and can be downloaded. And I've got about three links here I just wanted to mention. And the first one is the Arcade Archive, and that's at arcarc.xmission.com. That's arcarc.xmission.com. And I'll put a link. I'll put a link to all these in the show notes so you guys can see them. And the next one is Crazy Kong. And if you guys go to crazykong.com/manuals, there's a good listing of manuals there as well. And text files. And that one's a little bit longer, so I won't read the URL here on the air. But that's another one you can go to where they've got some good arcade manuals as well for your game. But me and Tim always advocate getting arcade manuals for your game. You don't have to have a printed one, though. These PDFs will do the same job. And, you know, Seth, we mentioned earlier, you had that centipede. You want to know the pinouts. More than likely, those pinouts are in the manual. So, you know, that's always a good first step to take. You don't have to spend money on it. You know, just go to some of these websites, do a search on the internet, and you can find these resources.
Right. And you know, every game, even some of the, especially, or at least if you can get the type of game, like a Williams game, you get a Williams manual or something, a lot of times we'll have the schematics. And I know a lot of guys, when you first hear the word schematics, it sounds like something, oh my gosh, you got to be a wizard or something to read these.
Electrical engineer, I think.
Exactly, yeah. and you really don't. A lot of times it's just following the wires, kind of like solving a puzzle. Okay, here, and it goes here, and it goes through this chip. A lot of times you guys can do this. Just keep in mind that a lot of manuals are kind of lengthy, and you can go through some printer ink real fast and some pages.
Sure. And, you know, we recommend on the site, you know, and under our recommended books post, the book from Atari. And the book was nothing more than basically a big manual on how to work on arcade games. And these manuals from the 80s are so valuable to you because you got to remember that this is a time period when people did not know how to work on arcade games. They had no clue. And these manuals basically take you step by step through the basic troubleshooting of your game to make sure that you can get it up and running. Because a lot of people who bought arcade games in the 80s, they didn't know how to work on them. They were just buying them because they knew that a Pac-Man cost $4,000 and it made $4,000 in a week. And they thought, oh, I can make my money back on that. You know, but when it broke, they didn't know how to fix it. So these manuals are written for people who might not have all of the skills or all of the know-how. And a lot of those guys are just like you guys are now. You get your first arcade game, and this is the first time you've ever even opened one up.
John, you know, I can remember the very first arcade that I worked in. I want to say it was about 1980, right when Pac-Man was coming out. And, you know, we didn't have a clue. We didn't know how to use a soldering gun.
Right.
And I remember back in the day, the guy that from our church that owned it, he would send me to Radio Shack, and back then we could get parts to work on games and different things. But we always had a manual, and a lot of those early manuals are really good to teach you how to work on that era of games. Even if it's not a manual you have, it's good to have some of that kind of stuff around.
Exactly. So, you know, hopefully, Michael, that answers your question and everything. And hopefully that'll be, you know, take a look at that manual and see if you can't, you know, see if you can't at least get some idea of how to solve your problem from there. Dip switches, again, we will stress that too on arcade games. Dip switches obviously control the coin, you know, how many coins it takes to play the game, difficulty settings, and all that good stuff.
Right. It needs to be said about a dip switch. Make sure that your game is off when you change the switch. In other words, you just go change the dip switch while the game is on, and a lot of times it won't take effect. You need to turn your game off, make the dip switch changes, then turn it back on.
And Tim's exactly correct. Make sure that game is off, make those changes, turn it back on, and you should see the effect immediately, and it should see a change almost immediately. So, well, hopefully that answers your question, Michael. We got a little long-winded because we got a little bit of a offshoot there on the manuals thing, but we can't stress enough that.
That never happens.
That's we never get off topic. What are you talking about, Tim? So no, but we want to stress things that are important to all of the other collectors out there, you know, that might help you guys out as well. And we feel like manuals and dip switches are two things that we should really stress, and maybe we haven't even stressed enough up to this point. So, okay, let's move on to Anthony, and I think this is the same Anthony from earlier, but he writes us again, and he says, "Hello again. In regards to the monitor chassis sold by 8liners.com, the 8liners website has instructions on how to put one of their chassis on a working television tube. Assuming everything matches properly, how does this affect the picture players see on the arcade game versus replacing with a completely new monitor," he says. Thanks. So, Tim, you know, using the 8liners chassis with a television tube is different from an arcade monitor. Exactly how? I think it's what he's asking.
Oh, I don't think he'll be able to notice the difference, except for he says, versus a completely new monitor. Let's be perfectly clear here. Well, there is nothing that looks prettier to me, well, maybe one or two things, but than a brand new monitor. I mean, a new monitor is a new monitor.
Right.
But if you go and put, for instance, if I put five of my games in my game room and I shoot pictures on you and I want to make you guess which one came out of a TV tube versus 8liner chassis, you wouldn't know the difference you would not be able to tell by looking at it. Because, guys, all of your old chassis, a lot of times when we ask people what kind of monitor they have, the first thing they say is, I have a Zenith or an RCA. Well, what they're telling you is they were tubes. They were television tubes that they used. So using a TV tube is perfectly fine. In fact, it is. Most arcade games are TV tubes.
Right.
So those will work just fine. But the chassis part, what powers it and everything, the game is going to look like it did, like a Pac-Man or something. You won't be able to, you should not be able to notice any difference, or so minimal that, you know, and the alternative right now of not being able to find anything, I would say that you wouldn't, the average person, maybe. I'm sure somebody out there is going to get their magnifying glass out and prove me wrong on this one, but, you know, somebody that comes over to your house and plays, they're not going to notice the difference. They're not going to go, what's wrong with this monitor, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Doesn't look like something I remember. It's going to look like what you remember in arcade.
Exactly. If it, you know, I'm with Tim here, you know, TV tubes, we've been, several people have recommended to us, you know, using television tubes in arcade games, and we're going to go ahead and pass along the information to y'all, you know, why not? You know, if you know, usually TV tubes have less burn-in, they, you know, they're very clean, and, you know, should work just fine for your arcade game. So hopefully that answers Anthony's question, you know, why not? Go ahead and try it out.
And if somebody has an opposite opinion, remember, we never claim to be the guru gods. If you've tried it and you got bad results or something, I mean, we're not going to offend us or anything. Tell us about it. If you got pictures or whatever, want to prove it, or you had some bad experience doing this, I'd like to know it. But for most of the people I've talked to, everybody said that looked okay, you know.
Sure. So hopefully, Anthony, you can try that out and let us know how it goes for you. So.
Well, and then we talked about this, Jonathan. An LCD TV looks awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But it almost looks too good.
Right.
So if our goal has always been to have the feel and the look of an original arcade game.
Authenticity.
And I hardly ever saw any in arcades back in the days that monitors were just super bright. They always had burn-in
right.
and all that. So I never really have minded some of that on my games because it gave them that feel and that wear and tear kind of look that was fine with me.
Sure.
A lot of people are more pickier than that, but as long as it was colors were bright and everything, I never thought that much about it. I don't think they will either.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, hopefully, Anthony, that answers your question. Now, we got two questions from one from Brian and one from Sega Ages asking about our repair services. And I'll go ahead and read both of them real quick. And he says, hi, I have a Wells Garner monitor that has no red, and I would really like to have it fixed. It possibly needs a cap kit. Do you guys allow chassis and neg boards to be sent in for repair? If so, how much and what is the process? And then we got one from Sega Ages. And they write, do you guys still do chassis repair? I have a K7000 monitor and have no idea what's going on with it. It gets no power, and I got to the point where I ended up just buying another cab just because I wasn't able to get the monitor working, or I was able to get a great monitor for $150. If you guys still do chassis repair, how much would it cost roughly for me to send my K1000 chassis to you to get repair? It has a cab kit on it, but no, it gets no power. So, Tim, let's just go over real quick, like, kind of our policy and rates on that so people know in case they do want to send in some stuff for repair.
Well, first of all, let me say that Jonathan and I both have day jobs, and we have plenty of stuff around here to work on. Most of the work that we're going to give is to Michael anyway.
Right.
So you guys might want to contact Michael directly or at least mail it there. Then we'll take a day or of the week or a Saturday or something, go up there and help and repair them. General repair prices, you can, I would say, average about $70. And guys, we know that sometimes is, you know, $5 worth of parts, but that's why we're going to try and encourage everybody to do it. It makes us a little money to try to do that, plus Michael's expertise and things that he, the tools that he uses, some higher dollar equipment and stuff that, you know, I mean, it's worth it. You can turn it around pretty fast, and I feel like do a pretty thorough job. So I would, you know, occasionally, guys, if you price them, your flybacks and stuff can get pretty expensive. I've seen a flyback cost up to $50. I've actually seen them cost higher than that, but I'm talking about some of the games we work on. So I would say on the high side, maybe $100, $125. So give you a range there. If we get it, it's got one bad cap, and we replace it, it's usually around $35-$40 just for the, you know, our time to do it,
sure.
1 hour shop fee. But average repair, you know, might take a, need a few parts and everything, around $70 probably.
Sure. So, you know, hopefully that answers your question, both those questions. You know, yes, we do take in chassis for repair, and we will fix them. It's going to be around $70, just depending on what the problem is. Could be more, could be less.
And, John, what's Michael's website? They can email him for address and stuff?
TV Repair Online, and you guys can contact Michael at michael@tvrepaironline.com. And we still don't have a website up for him. I've been meaning to get a hold of him. But, you know, hopefully you guys can, you know, he has his email link on there right now. Just, you know, click the email link, send him over an email, let him know that that we referred you to him, and he should be able to take care of that. So.
Right. And I know that Michael could use the money, too. I can tell you guys, you won't send it to anybody that won't do a better job. And more than likely, we'll go up and help. We get several of these. I will say this, that, you know, it's not a full-time business for us, so, you know, if you guys can be a little patient, we try to turn them around in about a week. You know, there may be some people that are faster, but a lot of times you usually pay a little bit more. Some people that do this full-time, you know, they just have the time to sit down and do it that day as soon as they get it. A lot of times we don't, but...
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully that answers the questions for the repair prices and everything. Okay, now let's move to the YouTube questions, Tim, and we have one from Big Nate 7504. I should say before we get on to Big Nate, though, that Stan is here, and he's going to fill in for us on this last couple of questions. So, Stan, it's good to see you again. We're glad that you're here with us. So, you know, say hi to the folks out there.
Thank you. Welcome.
Yeah. That's right. So, you might remember Stan from episode 11 where we were filming. See, I got the video stuff in my head, Tim, where we were recording episode 11. So, we're glad to have Stan back. But let's go ahead and get to Big Nate's question real quick. And he says, hi. I was wondering if you guys might have a suggestion as to what might be wrong with my off-road challenge machine. Recently it stopped working and I noticed that there is power to the monitor but nothing on the main board. I checked the fuses and they are good. The machine also has a problem with the monitor either having a red tint to it sometimes or sometimes collapsing down to a small horizontal line in the middle of the screen. It seems to be fixed by gently shaking the machine. I was wondering if maybe the shaking could have messed up the main board or something so that it would not be getting any power. Thanks and keep up the great work in the videos. So, Tim, what do you got here for Big Nate? It sounds like he's having a couple of problems here.
Well, you know, I'm going to take good care of anybody named Big Nate.
That's right. I'm scared of him already.
That out there, yeah. Big Nate, one thing, your monitor has AC power running to it. Your game boards and stuff or your DC comes off your switching power supply. So what more than likely happened is something went out in your power supply where you're not getting voltage to your board. So definitely you could check the fuses down there in the bottom of the game, or it could be just a time for your power supply to die and about time to upgrade that power supply. I think I've seen an off-road challenge, and I've seen them with both. Guys, I've seen them with an old-school kind of power supply. Like, some guys are like, what is this thing in my game? You remember we got those questions?
Well, it's like that centipede that Seth had earlier.
But a lot of them were upgraded or started to roll out with a newer style. So I would definitely check the power supply because your AC a lot of times will just run straight up to your monitor. That's why you get monitor but no game, and it's not playing or anything. Also, a good indicator I like to tell people a lot of times, your coin lights usually come straight from your power supply. They're not AC voltage. They run off your 12 or your 5 volts. So if your coin lights are not working, a lot of times that's a good indication that your power supply is bad, something simple like that.
Yeah, sure. Now, what about the horizontal line and the red tinting that he's having with his monitor, Tim?
Yeah, well, you know, we've talked a lot about that horizontal line down the middle of the screen before. Could be a cap, but more than likely it's starting that collapse problem. But with the red tinting, he talks about shaking it. Well, that kind of stinks every time you want to play. You got to shake it. Well, that was usually indicative of a cold solder joint. And we've discussed those pretty in-depth before on the places to check them even earlier in this podcast. So you definitely want to check your solder joints on the back of where your pins come in from your game and on that neck board on the back of those transistors and those areas, you know, reflow that solder real good and check your pins coming from your game. It's definitely just a really short connection there. But first thing we got to do, we got to get it back up and running. And let's check all those fuses, especially that power supply. Make sure there should be some fuses on that power supply, hopefully that protected it.
Sure. Now, you know, in the red tint could also be, we talked about earlier, Tim, the red drive. It could definitely be a higher red drive.
Just an adjustment, you know, and so definitely we always want to start simple there.
And the shaking on it, if you're gently shaking it and it's affecting the monitor, it very well could be affecting the potentiometer that controls that red drive. Potentiometer may be dirty where dust has settled onto it and it's moving and it's getting down in the crack and it's not allowing that to come through, or cold solder joint. But with shaking it and then the board going out, I would also check your edge connection just to make sure, because those driving games from that era are notorious for having bad edge connections, and a lot of some of those driving games from the off-road challenge era. So check that too. If you're getting power, you notice that your coin lights are on and your board is still dead and your monitor's working and it's up and down when you're shaking it, check that edge connector, because it could be you're shaking it contact on and off.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Stan, and I agree. You know, you definitely need to check around those areas that Stan and Tim were talking about, and, you know, check for those cold solder joints around there and see if there's not some, you know, maybe some, and freshen up the solder right there. Now, he puts it by saying gently shaking. You know, I don't know about y'all, but whenever I have something malfunction, I'm sitting there, stupid thing, why aren't you working? You know, I'm like hitting it, and then when it comes back on, I'm like, yay, I actually fixed it, right?
Yeah, I used to have the WWE game, WWF, you know, and I could always do a SmackDown move on it.
That's right.
I have one. I think it was kind of funny to hit the side of the game just for that reason.
That's right. You take like a rubber mallet to it, and you're just like, you know. But hey, at least he says gently shaking the game, you know, which you know, obviously lends us to believe that hopefully it's just something a little short somewhere that's causing this issue. So hopefully, Big Nate, that answers your questions. And now we're going to move on to Shock 25SR. And this is a lot less of a question and just a lot more of a comment. And we always like to read these, you know, so because we love getting them. That's one of the reasons. But he says, just want to say I think it's great what you guys are doing. Sharing your general knowledge about arcades is something that not everyone does. Most people who have this knowledge just want to make a profit. It's cool that guys like you realize that people who have a love for games don't always have the money to spend on a repair tech. Just want to say thank you and keep up the good work on showing us noobs how an arcade is made. Keep it cool. Cheers. And so it's great to hear emails like that, right, Tim? Where, you know, we get these positive feedback, and we always like to hear them. That's why we always read them.
Sure. I always say sucking up will get you everywhere. You need some cakes, just let me know. But one thing he says, you know, he mentions another term about somebody making a profit. I don't know. I didn't know that was possible in arcade business.
You mean people make profit of this? I didn't know that.
I haven't seen it yet.
So you really do. We honestly, knowledge, it won't be long, guys. I know it's harder and harder. We've had people contact us. In fact, John, I got a call the other day from about, I would say, 200 miles away in Arkansas. They could not find anybody to do theirs, and they were wondering. Another guy was talked about flying us up to Iowa.
That's right.
Couldn't find anybody. So, you know, this is a not so much a lost art, just that people aren't going into these fields and stuff. So it's collectors like us and, you know.
And like y'all.
Yeah, like you guys that are listening. Not only that, I've noticed that, you know, it gives me I want to try things when my VCR or my DVD player goes out. Instead of all of a sudden chunking it and going to Walmart and getting another one, I'm looking for cold solder joints and I'm looking for those things. I can think of a lot of things that I've repaired that normally I would have thrown out.
Yeah, my Kenwood stereo deck at home that was very expensive. Cold solder joint fixed it.
Right.
And
that's right.
I was empowered and emboldened by working on video games to do it. So,
or electrical system in your car, you know, we track those. We use those things. They have a starting point and ending point. We check for continuity in the wires. Next thing you know, oh, we found it. Hook up the trailer lights. So what we want to encourage you to do is, by all means, try things yourself. And another thing is to share that knowledge with your children or your friends or your neighbors or your nieces and nephews, because, you know, these are good traits to know. And we all had some great teachers and great mentors in our life, but we want to be those type of people that share that knowledge.
Exactly. I mean, knowledge is no good if one person has it. It's something that's meant to be shared among people. And this kind of knowledge, you know, is powerful for those of us who have always wanted to collect arcade games. I mean, me and Tim obviously got into this hobby, and Stan here, we've all gotten into this hobby and just kind of picked up things over time. And we try to share this knowledge with as many people as possible so that we can keep – our goal is to keep the games alive. We don't like seeing broken games. We want to see the games fixed. I mean, you know, that's why, as we've said before, the motto of Arcade Repair Tips is fix the game and play the game. We want to see the games being played, because if they're just sitting on your garage, they're not working, they're not getting love, they're not being played. And so that's the main reason why we want to share this information with y'all, so you guys can get those games up and running, and we can get it all, you know, all working, and we can all enjoy playing them, because that's what they're all, that's what games are all about, you know. So, Stan, you have anything to add that we haven't already said here?
Yeah, just that, yeah, you know, rejuvenate your tube. You have to rejuvenate your tube to, and because you got to learn to take care of your games, because it's not about profit driven, as Jonathan was saying. You know, the only profit that will be made is when I croak and my wife sells all my games. But all kidding aside, it's about getting them fixed and keeping them fixed, and that's where the passion is at.
So, well, I think me and Tim will resurrect a monument on your garage. We'll put a little gold plaque there. It says Stan's Arcade. You know, people will drive for miles to come.
Melissa
see
will
it
be driving in the garage.
Okay.
See, I noticed that Jonathan is assuming that you're going to go before him. I'm not so sure about me. So, you know, Jonathan, definitely, hopefully, you'll live longer than both of us, and you can do a shrine to us.
There we go. We'll put up a honorary arcade in y'all's name. So there you go. But no, it's great that we can keep these old games alive, and we love to hear the guys are out there working on them, and that we can help you guys out in any way we can. So okay, but that about wraps it up for the podcast. We do have a couple of housekeeping things we do want to talk about before we go, though. And one of them is that we've moved Arcade Repair Tips to a new and faster server. You guys might have noticed, if you guys have been to the website within about the last couple of weeks or so, that we've moved to a faster server. The website responds a lot better. We're much happy, you know, we're very happy to be with our new host and everything, and we hope that it works out a whole lot better for y'all and us. So
that doesn't necessarily mean I can respond to your emails.
That's right. The email time response is still out, but at least the site loads faster for those of you who want to watch the videos, read the articles, or whatever you want to do on the site. So we much appreciate that. We also want to tell everybody that we have appointed a community manager. Community manager is somebody who oversees all of our social media type stuff, and unfortunately this is not a paid position, as we said, not a whole lot of profit in this, but Mark Nellis, who most of you probably know from the questions on the podcast, as well as our good friend who was stationed at Guantanamo Bay there for a while, has now taken over the role as community manager for Arcade Repair Tips, and very willingly, and he said he might have to do some things when he's on leave to, you know, as far as he might be out of touch during those times, but I said we could work around that, and he was more than willing to be our community manager for that. So, you know, we thank Mark a whole lot. We welcome him to the team, and we hope that you guys find all the content he's going to be posting on the Facebook page very useful. So, Tim, you have anything to say about our new community manager?
Yeah, I've been noticing some of the posts on Facebook and the pictures going up, Mark. We want to really say we not only appreciate what you're doing for us, but what you do, of course, for our country. And we look forward to one day getting to hang out, since you're not too far away, and Stanley lives in San Antonio, so we got some connections there. Maybe we can get down and see Mark one of these days.
Yeah,
and definitely. And it's we're glad to have Mark here. I will just kind of throw this out, and maybe to get listener feedback on this, but we've talked about maybe doing a weekly question and answer session, maybe like on Tuesday or Thursday nights, where you guys could call the Arcade Repair Tips voicemail line, and me and Tim would actually pick up for a couple hours, so you guys could actually get us on the phone and talk. We enjoy talking to y'all so much. We call people who call in via the voicemail line back. It's always an exciting experience for us, you know. I called somebody this week, Tim, who had left us a voicemail, I think, on the last podcast, and he said, "It's so weird to talk to you because you're just some guy I listen to on the radio, and here I am, you're actually responding to what I'm saying." And I'm like, "No, I'm just we're just normal guys here. We're not, there's nothing special about us except that we have a very unusual hobby, and that we like to work on arcade games. But we're just normal guys, and we're, if you guys call us back, we're going to try to call you back as well. But, maybe get some feedback from y'all as to what you think about maybe doing a weekly question and answer where you guys could call in, and me and Tim and Stan or whoever we have on the phone could try to help you troubleshoot your questions. So if you guys would enjoy that or would call in, give us some feedback, let us know. Send us an email.
Or, maybe even if you let us know what we can tell you the time you can be working on your game at that time, and we can give you some advice on what to do, and you can try while we're on the phone, kind of like a phone support, I think is what Johnson's after, which
right.
is what I use every day at work. I'm calling up Wells Gardner or somebody, and I'm like, okay, it's doing this, And we'll use any of our resources we can try to help you guys.
Right. But, you know, we've had a lot of people request that we go back to the live show where we took the live callers. But, you know, we had some – obviously we had some problems with different troll callers and things like that. So I don't know if we want to do that much more. But we still want to have this outlet where you guys can contact us if you want to directly. So this might be a good compromise for that. But if you guys are interested, just give us – you know, give some feedback. Send us an email and let us know on that. We've also been tinkering with some new ways to submit questions. Nothing as of yet, but we're thinking about maybe going to like an FAQ type system where you guys could submit questions via the website, and then the answers would be posted on the site. Because right now, the only way we post the answers are really through the podcast. So, you know, you guys can look for that. You know, we've gotten to this new server, so there's a lot more stuff I want to do, Tim. I'm trying to spur up more more things, but that might be something that we look at in the future as far as submitting questions. But for now, we do have our normal contact information, which I'll tell you guys about now. You know, you guys can always email us at questions@arcaderepairtips.com. Of course, all those emails are read by me and Tim. And, you know, if you guys send a question there, we're going to try to get back to you as timely as possible. You know, turnaround time on that usually is about 2, 3, 4 weeks, unfortunately. We'd like it to be faster, but it's just it's hard for us to get around to every email you guys send in. We get several emails, you know, every time between podcasts and things. So, but we try to get back to every one of y'all. So, you know, just keep that in mind when you email us. There are a lot that come in, and we try to answer in a timely fashion. You can also call our voicemail line, which tends to get our attention a little bit better, at 972-8 AR Tips as in Arcade Repair Tips. That's 972-8 AR Tips. Or for those of you who don't like to spell on your phone, that's 972-827-8477, which is pretty easy to remember as well, Tim. Now, along with the new server move, I put some new links up, and I want to encourage you guys to use these new links. What we've done is for every kind of social media outlet that we have now, we've added a quick link, which will really help you guys out. So, for instance, for our Twitter, if you guys want to get to our Twitter page, instead of going to the old URL, you guys can go to twitter.arcaderepairtips.com, and that will redirect you to our Twitter page. We also, you know, I can never remember the Facebook page, Tim. I was always having problems with it, so we've made it easy. Facebook.arcaderepairtips.com will take you to the Facebook page. So that makes it much easier on y'all that, you know, if you can't remember the Facebook page like me, that's an easy way to get to it. We also have our YouTube page at youtube.arcaderepairtips.com, and of course, most of you visit our YouTube page and watch the videos. And, of course, I really want to push this one this week since I did get it up and everything. We are on iTunes. And if you guys listen to the podcast, you can listen to it through iTunes and download the episodes through there. And you can get to our iTunes page at itunes.arcaderepairtips.com. And another thing is let's see some reviews. We have no reviews, Tim. I am very upset that we have no reviews. Somebody go on there. Even a bad review would be okay at this point, I think. You know, I mean, I just want to see something, you know, some feedback on the iTunes page. You know, so you guys give us, you know, it also helps our ranking in iTunes. Not that we're ever going to rank. We'll probably be in the top 150,000 for the rest of our time in the entertainment section, I think is what we're listed in. But, you know, if you guys are just really bored one day and want to do something, you know, go to itunes.arcaderepairtips.com and give us a review and let us know how we're doing. So. Okay, Tim, I think we're going to sign off here. Is there anything else you want to add before we head out?
Just thank you guys for listening and for keep sending us questions. And, I think one part of the show, I guess, that I really like is the update section when somebody tells us they tried it and it worked or it didn't work and we want to keep fighting. Sometimes I've seen some guys, you know, kept on trying, well, it's not this, maybe it's this, till they finally got it fixed. So pictures on the Facebook page is really something I enjoy looking at.
Right, and there's a fan photo section up there now that we've instituted since Mark's become the community manager, and you guys can post your photos in our fan photos page on the Facebook page. Again, facebook.arcaderepairtips.com. So what about you, Stan? Anything else you want to leave us in closing with?
No, just thanks for having me again.
And yeah, it was a quick trip this time.
Quick trip. Rejuvenate your tube.
That's right. He just popped in to say rejuvenate your tube. You're like the little toasty guy in Mortal Kombat, you know, just coming in to get your little tagline in.
Rejuvenator and see what happens.
We're going to rejuvenate
I've been hooked up to it.
Okay, so remember to rejuvenate your tubes and everything. And I think that's going to do it for us here on the Arcade Repair Tips Podcast for Episode 12. So until next time, you know, good luck with all your future repairs. And remember that when you fix the game, you play the game. Take care, everybody.